Each week in Advent, there is one figure that is center stage, so to speak, in our readings and in the liturgy. The first week of Advent, it is that awesome figure of the Son of Man, the mysterious figure prophesied in the Old Testament who one day will come in glory on the clouds of heaven. In the second and third weeks of Advent, the center stage figure is, of course, John the Baptist, sent to prepare the way for Christ. And now, with the liturgy today, the 17th of December, we enter the octave before Christmas, and there's no doubt that the central figure here is Our Lady herself. She is offered for us to contemplate. She is offered for us as a model of how to live as Christians in this world as we await the coming of Christ. As we contemplate her, just as she herself, we're told, contemplated and pondered what was taking place within her, this is the way to make Christmas a truly Christian feast. If we go out into the streets, into Oxford Street or the shops around here, the character of Christmas has increasingly become a secular feast. Some people even don't use the word Christmas now. They like to call it the winter festival, so as not to offend anybody who's not a Christian. If we want to make Christmas truly a Christian feast, and the way to do it is to do it with Mary, to contemplate the events that are taking place with her. And as we contemplate Mary, increasingly we enter into a deeper and deeper relationship with her. We talk, of course, about having a personal friendship and relationship with Christ, which is of supreme importance and central in our lives. But each of us, too, as Catholics, is called and invited to have a relationship with Christ's mother. And it is a relationship that is at the same time highly personal, but also it's a relationship which the Church itself has and offers us. Of course, it must be a very, very personal thing. Each of us has his or her own story of how we discovered Mary to be our mother, our friend, our intercessor. What could be more personal than someone's relationship with their mother? And our relationship with Mary is woven into our relationship with our own earthly mothers. Some of those relationships will have been good and happy ones. Some of them may have had rather darker and less happy sides. Mary takes all that is best in our relationship with our earthly mothers and builds on it and perfects it. She takes all that was wounded in our relationship with our mothers and heals it. So it's a very, very personal story that each one could tell, and it's very good at this time of Christmas to be in touch with that story, to look back over our lives, to reflect on how we came to take Mary into our hearts and how that relationship has grown. Because that is how the Church's relationship with Mary began as well. We read at the 19th chapter of St. John's Gospel in verse 27, when Jesus was dying on the cross, he gave Mary into the care of John. And the scripture tells us that from that hour the disciple took her to his own home. Actually, that's not a very accurate translation. The Greek in the New Testament doesn't actually say that John took her into his home. He was a very young man, not married, and it's doubtful if he really had a home, but literally the Greek means that he took her into his own things, into his own world, into his own heart. He took her to himself. No doubt that included physically caring for her, but it meant much more than that. John made a place for Mary in his life, and that is what each one of us is called to do. And not only do we do it personally, but the Church itself has been given to Mary for her to look after. She is our protector, our model, our mother, our intercessor. In this coming week in Scripture, we shall particularly focus on the Gospel of the Annunciation, that wonderful story when Mary is told what is to happen, and she asks that very poignant question to the angel, "How can this be? How can I be the mother of God's Son if I am a virgin?" It's a very interesting question that it's worth pondering. St. Augustine, when he comments on this passage, said that it would be easy to judge Mary rather harshly for asking this question. What sort of a question is it? Is it like the questions Moses asked God, for example, when he was told that he was to lead the people out of Egypt? Questions full of doubt. "I can't do this. Choose someone else, God. I don't believe you're really going to do this." Is it like the question that Zechariah, John the Baptist's father, asked when he was told that his wife would conceive, and he was struck dumb because he doubted? Did Mary want time to make her mind up? Was she looking for some sort of sign? It's very interesting, I think, to recall St. Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits. There's a very fascinating story about him. He spoke so frequently about the need for us to be detached from our own plans, our own activities, to be ready to do God's will. And someone rather mischievously asked him on occasion, "Well, okay, you talk about detachment. Suppose you were told tomorrow that the church, the Pope, was going to suppress your society, the Jesuits. All that you've worked for, all that you've dreamed of in your life, the church is going to suppress it. How long do you think it would take you to accept that decision in perfect tranquility?" Rather mischievous question, but St. Ignatius is supposed to have taken it very seriously and pondered the question, and very seriously, after thought, to have replied, "Well, I think it would take me about 45 minutes. This takes us, dear friends, to the heart of why Mary is so important for us. She is greater than any saint, even than St. Ignatius. She didn't take 45 minutes to make up her mind to say yes to God. This is why St. Louis de Montfort continually tells us to keep consecrating ourselves to Mary, personally, and as we shall do later, collectively as a parish. You see, when we are faced with all the difficulties of life, when we have decisions to make, when we're trying to see what is God's will, how can I accept it, there are two quite different things at work in us which we need to be clear about. The first difficulty we have is that we are simply creatures. We're very limited. Our intelligence is finite. We can't see everything all at once. An angel, we're told by St. Thomas Aquinas, can see immediately all the things that he has to see to make up his mind and know what to do. We as human beings are not like that. If you ask me a difficult question, I might have to go and read up about it on the internet or in a book or take time to make my mind up. And the Annunciation brings this difference between human beings and angels out very beautifully by the fact that the message is conveyed to Mary not by God directly, but through an angel. Even Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden before the fall were in this state. Although free from sin, they were subject to all the limitations of creaturely existence. Mary is like that too. She is a creature. She is limited. She is finite. She cannot immediately see how she can become the mother of the Messiah. But we have another difficulty which she did not share, and that is that we are fallen creatures. The effect of sin is that we have, all of us, even the most saintly, disordered inclinations which remain in our hearts even after baptism and can incline us to make wrong choices. So if you come to me, for example, if I'm planning a nice day out today, I don't know, and you ask me to change my plans, Partly what's going on is that I'm simply, just because I'm a limited creature, I'm trying to work out with my mind what's best and what the implications will be. But I'm also contending with something difficult in my heart that comes from sin. I might be resentful because you've interfered with my life. I might be sad because I'm being asked to give up something I was looking forward to. I probably have wounded pride because I realize I have all these humiliated feelings. The point is that Mary has the first of these difficulties. She is a creature like us, but she does not have the second. By a wholly unique act of God's grace, which we celebrated a few days ago on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, Mary is completely free from all those disordered inclinations that we may have. Her question, therefore, says St. Augustine, is not inspired by doubt or resistance. When she says to the angel, "How can this be?" it is simply the rather innocent question of a child who does not fully understand and who's inspired by a reverent love to ask what she must do fully to enter into God's plan. St. Ignatius was fully aware that he was not like Mary. He had that resistance in his own heart, even though he was confident that God's grace was such that it would overcome those feelings quite quickly. And if that was true for him and all the other saints, how much more true is it for us? Here we're not speaking so much about overcoming our obvious sins. Obviously, we all have to struggle with those. We're talking about the struggle that remains in our hearts, even and perhaps especially when we're trying to do good things. I don't know if you're anything like me, but I'm sure you've had the experience, as I have, that, you know, you can set out intending to help someone with the best of intentions, as we say, and you just end up making things worse or upsetting people. You undertake some good work. Perhaps you came here today to take part in this day with Mary, a wonderful work to do, only to discover as you go on with it that you've rather spoilt it by some human weakness. You wanted to do things too much your way rather than somebody else's. Or perhaps in the secret of your heart, if you were really, really honest, you hope that someone would notice and give you praise for it, and they didn't. That is why offering all our works through Mary is of such value. That is why we should consecrate ourselves frequently to Our Lady, because she is quite free of that hidden taint of selfishness, which so often spoils or weakens what we want to do for God. She's like a sort of water filter. You know, you purify the water through a filter and out comes something pure, the other end. We can take to her all our good intentions, all our works, all our sufferings, and say, "I'm not going to do this in my own name or in my own power or my own way. I consecrate it, I offer it totally to you, and it will be purified and pleasing to God." And in order to experience this, I follow the example of St. Louis de Montfort and recommend to you to take one or two concrete situations in your life. Think of something that is rather difficult at the moment. Perhaps there is a difficult relationship in your life at present. Perhaps there's some area of your personal life, some area of your work or your family life that you are struggling with. I recommend you consciously consecrate this part of your life every day to Mary for a couple of weeks, through a few simple daily acts of trust and prayer. You can make the consecration prayer of St. Louis if you know it or find it, or you can simply take Blessed John Paul II's motto, "Totus tuus," "I am totally yours," and offer it to Mary. As St. Louis de Montfort himself says, experience will teach you infinitely more about this than what I can tell you. You will be surprised, and your soul will be full of joy. Joy is the sure sign of Mary's presence. Those very first words of the angel to her can be quite correctly translated, not "Hail Mary," but "Rejoice, Mary, highly favored one." May we rejoice with her and in her as we offer all our works to God through her. Ave Maria.